break, Gino was actually flashing the actual album covers of three Gino Banana, presumably album, right? Were they on the Yucatone label or one of the other ones?
Discotone label.
Oh, right, because government labels and all that.
Well, not so much. It started like Tito differentiates that. Like he started as a government thing and then kind of outsourced it to the companies. He really desperately tried to invent something else, knowing our weakness of nationalism, because it's not easy when you have kids who are fighting between themselves, right? And I'm really sounding like somebody who's defending a dictator, but I'm not. And you know, I definitely judge him for a lot of, you know, forced things that was done. But you know, at least my people weren't shooting each other, which kind of is
right. I didn't realize till later why there were different labels. When I'd ask somebody in Croatia or Slovenia about a band that turned out to be Serb after the war or something, and I've never heard of them. I'm not going to talk about them, and vice versa in Belgrade, where I felt by far the most nationalist fever, and even in my own audience. And
friendly in Belgrade?
Guy talked about his art, and then he said, and this was several years ago now that, oh, there's going to be another war soon. I can just feel it. I mean, the Croats killed my grandfather. I can never forget that. And it just goes on and on and on. And meanwhile, were you still making pop recordings during the war?
No, my third record was, I was actually, my first record, I'm taking that back when I said that you're going to hate my records. No, you're going to like my first record. My second record you're going to hate because I accidentally made a hit. And then it totally turned. And then the record label jumped like greedy, saying, one more like that. So I made another one like that. You know how,
I never had to worry about that. None of those labels wanted anything to do with me, nor me with them.
You know,
it mildly.
And I thought that I'm a lucky kid, but then I remember like 1989, and I'm doing this third album, and I'm thinking like, shit, my friends that are having garage bands, I would trade everything I have in my life to have a garage band, but I can't do it right now. Even if I do, nobody's gonna fucking believe me. Who's gonna believe me? You know, they're gonna boycott me because they and then the war happened, and I really used it. I came over here. I remember losing the money was one revelation, one liberation. And the other one, I remember coming to Seattle after Ruby Marchand introduced me to Jack. And I stood, you know, the Crocodile Cafe that later on we played and sold out. And we, you know, Chris and I played together and it was amazing. But the first time I came in, I stood in line and they were kind of touching you to see if you have weed or alcohol or anything. And I'm thinking,
right,
I've never experienced this in my life. I recorded my first record when I was 16 years old. I never stood in line for the club in my life, you know, and I felt an amazing liberation that I'm finally a normal human being. Now I can go and get the fight. In my early 30s, I was 32, you know, I can make a garage band right now and play what the fuck I want to play. And I did. And it's a great feeling.
Well, okay, so this means you were aware of many other, maybe cooler things going on in music, even in Sarajevo, while you were in Gino Banana. And it's not as though you were not aware of a punk scene or other kinds, but you did know all that.
Yes, I did, and I was friends with all of these people, and still am, with SCH, with all of these guys. I was still friends with them, and they really were good friends of mine. They knew me. They knew how much am I separating in myself. And now today, you know, when I come back, the kids don't know this story. My generation, like, what the fuck happened with him? He went crazy. You know, no, I just became myself. They know it. They remember that, and they remember, like, I remember when you were telling me, I'm going to leave all of this shit. I'm going to go somewhere and start all over again, because I remember that. Like, it is hard, again, you know, to be old and wise. You must first be young and stupid. You gotta change. It's not a bad thing. You gotta admit to yourself, I was wrong, let me start again, it's okay, I didn't kill anybody, right? You know,
right? But so another thing, when you had to do all these things, including standing in line for water, knowing you might get killed at any moment, at least once a week, if not once a day, that can do things to your nerve, of course, and somehow you get used to it to the degree that anybody can, or somehow you cope and you don't all have collective nervous breakdown. I mean, how were you able to hang on and not just complete? I mean, there must have been a fair number of suicides as well as wards. Or were they?
No. Suicides are later coming. I actually just wrote a song, and I'm going to do it with Edo, Maika, this hip-hop artist together. It's a folk song with oud, the Middle Eastern instrument, and me singing, and I want to have a hip-hop on that about suicide after the war. That's what happened later on. During the war, you don't have time, dude. You have no time. You got no time to think about anything but survival. It is not like you survive. It's a different... We are different. We're all different. You and I are different. We don't know. I remember when Chris and you and Kim played, I was supposed to be playing drums with you for the WTO. I went to see my mom.
Oh, really?
Yes. I went to see Gina played it, but I was supposed to play drums there. And I remember that. And I'm like, how would I react in a different country like that? I'm thinking. So you know a little bit how that is. But I can tell you that when the shit hits the fan, it's different. I mean, I really didn't care. I was just hoping that if it's going to hit me in the head. So I don't lose my legs. I don't lose my arms. I don't like have to crawl and look myself bleed out. You know, that was, and I was hoping that I'm going to die, not my mom, or, you know, this kind of things. But it's kind of, you're taking it pretty normal. My friend who played with me in, I don't want to out him right now, which one, but, you know, we played in Hair. He was afraid. I remember the theater is an amphitheater, and there was no way that shell's gonna come. Anyway, he was afraid. The moment we finished the last tone, boom, he would be in the shelter right away. And people don't understand that. We're all different. I remember this one of these singers from here is like, oh, well, you know, what's wrong with him? You know, if it happens to him, it's gonna happen to me too. And I'm trying to explain that we're all different. And the keyboard player is a very funny guy. He's like, dude, let me explain you something. There are people that are men, women, but they're also a transgender people. He's trying to explain to him from the beginning, you know, how different we all are. And, you know, that is how different we are if the shit hits the fan. But we are not different in the way that we're going to go and jeopardize our own life, right? We're different in the way how to juggle that fear. We all are afraid. Yeah. But how are we juggling the fear? Are you running home and laying down under the bed? Or you're running in between the bullets? Or you just can't? I mean, for instance, I could not stand being inside of the home. I felt like a shooting duck. I'm sitting over here and somebody's looking at me and somebody's going to shoot. I better run. I better be a moving target. Fuck it. You know, that's my thing. Yeah. After the war, however, the cancer time came in and the suicide time came. People were just going like flies. I know dozens of my friends who took their own life. And I'm just writing a song about it. It's going to be on our record, on our new record, number 12, Culture Shock. We talked about this. Maybe we will work together on it. Yes, we would like that too. I'm so happy with this song. It gives you, it's a song about a snake that surrounded my hometown and suffocating it. None of my songs is explicitly talking about, you know, straightforward. It's very ambiguous, but everybody knows what it is about. And I remember Edo, the other day I sent it to him, to this Edo Maika, you're gonna love this guy. He's from Bosnia, living in Zagreb with a woman from Tel Aviv, Jewish woman. Two of them, him Muslim and her Jewish, were living in Tel Aviv for years. You know, his best friend is the guy that I'm writing, and he's going to be a guest on it, and we're talking about it. And he's like, if I'm listening to the demo, he listens to the demo. We're just recording the demo at our rehearsal space, at our rehearsal studio. And he's like, oh my fucking God, I can't even, I don't believe I can do it live. You know, just listening about it makes me cry. That's going to be a challenge. That is the biggest thing about the war. You know, it happens and you think it's over. No, it's just started. PTSD is real. PTSD is later on when I started doing, I have a law degree, but then later on I really started getting very interested in psychology. PTSD is about shame, and shame is the worst feeling that the human can be exposed to. If you're exposed to shame, there are only two reactions that the humans can manifest. One is kill yourself, and the other one is to kill somebody else.
I'm not sure I see it as that black and white or cut dry, but how do you closely link PTSD, especially from a war and shelling and killing right in front of you, to shame? Why is that memory and those flashbacks automatically a source or type of shame?
Simply, you don't want to be vulnerable. Nobody wants to be vulnerable. It exposes you. It exposes who you are. It exposes your fears. Fears you do not want fears exposed. It is nothing premeditated. It's nothing that you know about. It's interconnected. It's about vulnerability. It's hard to be exposed. And you are exposed when you're targeted. PTSD can be, you know, different. There are different PTSD. PTSD from the molestation, PTSD from abuse, PTSD, but everything is basically abuse. This is, you know, the abuse of an abused woman with the PTSD from an idiot husband who's beating her all her life. That PTSD is as valuable as a PTSD of a person who spent 3 years in the basement. Yeah. Everything is different. You know, everything, it manifests differently. Hypervigilant trigger. That means if I'm molested by the guy who had mustache, every single time I see somebody with mustache, might be my trigger. Example. Right? The triggers are different. Everything is different, but the result is the same. You just want to end it because it's hard to live.
Right. Billy Gould, of course, picked you up or initially a culture shock for the cool arrow label.
Thanks to you.
And then he got you, but that's all right. Here we are. Good stuff came out all those years. Thank you, Bill. Bill also told me a little bit later when I was starting to go over those places myself that part of the reason it's really hard to go in and out and play in Bosnia is that time was, it wasn't just, you know, still serious poverty from leftover from the war, and thus booking agents in other parts of Europe don't see enough money to send you there. But the other one that he told me, at least at that time, was that there was so much PTSD and so many people were kind of cracked after that war that the EU was not letting anybody with a Bosnian passport come in to visit, or they were afraid they would come to visit and not leave, basically, and bring PTSD and major mental difficulties and illness with them. Therefore, no Bosnians can come into the EU.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I really want
to... Is that still true or not?
No, not anymore. A lot of years passed and a lot of shit in the world happened. So, you know, the new shit is replacing the old one. Yes. At the time, they were really afraid because this PTSD is a real thing. I want to thank Billy this every other way, not just to introduce me to introduce me to Billy, not just to introduce us to the world, and pretty much that's why we're back. For 26 years, we're working, but also to understand my country for what it is, to understand our people for who they are. We didn't want anything else but to be a part of the world. We just want to be a part of the world, and we almost were a part of the world from 1945 till 1990. One almost were the part of the world. We were the part of the world. All of a sudden, you know, it's not like we were in the Eastern Bloc, not like we were, you know, in the country where we couldn't travel, where we were surveilled or anything. Like, we couldn't go anywhere. So basically we knew what we were missing. Now all of a sudden, and I remember, I mean, we were accepting Czech people that were running through our country and going to the West. We were helping them. All of a sudden, we are the ogres. We are the unwanted ones. We even from Slovenians. You know, we are the ones that nobody... I remember, you know, my friend died on the border between Slovenia and Austria. He took his own life in the bathroom because Slovenians took his money and in order to get him to Austria, and Austrians didn't want to take him in, and he was stuck in between in the bathroom, and he took his life. So, I'm sorry. We just want to be like everybody else. And so do Ukrainians right now. That's my segue from crying. you know,
we need to talk about this.
We need to talk about this stuff. We need to talk about this. It's not just you kill somebody. It's generations and generations that are fucked over because of this thing. It is, you know, that's why our audience is 25 years old right now in Balkans. And that's not Eastern Europe. That's a South Europe. They understand what I'm talking about. They understand when I tell them, don't fucking dare to take the gun. Don't ever fucking take any for anybody. No, nobody. Don't even listen to me, what I'm saying. I'm a stupid, crazy old man too. Like, don't do that. Kids there are smart. Grown-ups here are smarter than the kids. Kids here are into phones and stuff. Over there, the grown-ups are in the phones and whatever this consumer madness is. The kids are not. At least the kids that I'm in touch with. I'm so believer in them. Same. Belgrade, Zagreb. We played Belgrade. I remember we played Zagreb and then two towns in Bosnia. This time I didn't want to play Sarajevo. And they, you know, my hometown, like, yeah, no, I want to play little cities. They deserve to have us too, right? We played two little cities instead of Sarajevo. And then we went to Belgrade. The same. The audience is the same. They even look alike. They react the same. They talk the same. They have the same ideas. They know each other. They travel to each other's countries right now. They're smarter than we are. We need to learn from them. They're everything that we, you know, Alternative Tentacles, I can't wait to show them how much more quality music is there in the world and how much, I mean, honestly, that's the audience forever. Those are the people that are going to save live music. I thought that we had done before the COVID. I thought this is it. I'm the last Mohican. That's it. You know. But no, we can do it. With these kids, we can do it.
Aha. Uh-huh. So what is Sarajevo like now?
Better now, today. My friend is a mayor. You know. It is under, it's hard to maintain it, but there's a left option that is in charge right in Sarajevo.
And when you say hard to maintain, are you mean hard to get people to get along with each other, or just or the hardness is
economic
perhaps? But tell me if I'm wrong, when you see all the destroyed apartment buildings and entire bombed out cities, thanks to Vlad the Second Impaler and what he's doing to Ukraine, it makes me think, Sarajevo got it really bad too.
Mm-hmm.
How much of it has been rebuilt? Is there still large areas that are still in ruins or not?
They repaired the center of a city for everybody to see it, right? You know, here's the center of a city. And then you move and you see the holes in the walls. And, you know, it's hard to repair everything. I would really be very happy if they would invest a little more money to that than in the roads than into making the religious objects. That would really make me happy. And I told them that, and amazingly so, they publish it. Every single crazy stuff that I say, they publish it. That's the respect that I never thought that I'm going to get there. So just the fact that my insanity got published over there tells me that things are going better. I had a great interview the other day with this, and I don't want to say I had. There was a great kid that interviewed me the other day with such a smart questions. We spoke like this for 3 hours, and all of that is on Prometheus' side, Prometheus. And he actually, we talked about, and the other day, this political observer and commentator actually took a part of that interview and made whole another view on that, my idea. We have a problem over there that we don't know what the politics is. Maybe I'm going to repeat myself again, but we think that the politics is to have a political party and that's it. No, that political party needs to have a plan and to have economical and infrastructural and cultural plan, right? Economy, infrastructure, culture. That's what makes a political party. Not a love towards your people and your church or the mosque or God that you believe in and nobody else does. That's not the political agenda. And that what is political agenda over there. And that's what I told them. And they asked me, who would you join politically? Would I run and shit? I wouldn't run ever because that I would never run for anything. I want to be free, man, in my life. I'm going to be. But who what I would support? I would support one political party in three entities. Bosniak, meaning Muslim entity. Serbian, meaning Orthodox. And Croatian, meaning Catholic entity. In the same entity that does not talk about history, who killed who. I know there's a lot of people that got killed by a lot of people from the other sides. And that cannot be forgotten. That cannot be forgiven. That cannot be anything. But what can? We do not have to remember it in every single fucking political speech and spread the hate all around. What we can do, I want a political party that is going to focus on unity and only have three. One of them would be infrastructure, culture, and economy. Those three agendas. If you talk about that, I would join you just because I want. I don't think that I'm going to like your economy. I don't know if I'm going to like your economy, or your infrastructure, your culture, but at least it's going to be a progress towards talking about real issues rather than talking about who did what to who. That is the problem in Bosnia. History is our problem. History is our problem. It's the problem of the right wing right now too. You know, their time machine thing. Like, you know, they think that, you know, here in that's pretty much a parallel with this thing in United States where they think that you know the unequal privileged status that somebody had 50 years ago, they consider it their right. You know, it's not a right. It was the bad time in history that people like you were profiting. That's all.
Yeah, a lot of this also would be a beautiful thing if it could ever be applied to Israel.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Israel or Greater Palestine, however you want to call it, even you know, I'll be amazed if this happens in our lifetime—a one-state solution instead of a two-state.
It would be great, you know. And again, it's about tolerance. It's about you believing. It's about political parties that are not going to favor one nation over the other, one religion over the other. That I want to believe. I am a Yugo-nostalgic kind of a guy. I liked Yugoslavia because nobody was killing anybody. And honestly, I'll tell you a joke. Honestly, they asked the old woman, you know, what was, you lived through all of these ages, what was your favorite time? And she said, well, I guess Turkish Empire, Ottoman Empire was the best. Why? What do you mean? I mean, they were kind of cutting people's heads, putting people on like on the sticks, whatever, they're burning people alive. Well, then I was 16. She said, I was 16 only then, you know. So, yes, I was 16 during that time. That's why I'm Yugo-nostalgic. But I am not blind. And I you know, I see right now the you know, the bad sides. However, the good side was, if there was any sides, the good side was that at the time we tried to put our differences aside, and it was forbidden to say what who did to whom during the World War II, because it would provoke nothing but the hate from the other. Hate speech was forbidden. You know, it's I still am very conflicted deep down. The anarchist in me, the person in my mom, figured that I'm an anarchist when I was 9 years old, and she told me that, and I told her I'm not, and then later on, like, shit, mom's right, I am an anarchist. Like, you know, anarchist in me wants to have everything free for everything, everybody, and no authorities, no, not, I'm talking Bakunin, I'm not talking breaking the windows, and these kids need to shut the fuck up and stop prostituting our name. But, you know, what I don't somehow believe that we can go further if we don't, if we look behind our back and into the history, what happened before, because so many bad things happened. I mean, I'm looking at Ukraine right now and what the Russians did to them. It's what Putin did to them. It's not Russians. I have my friends from Alexander Cheparukhin, the kids from Pussy Riot. They all, if they're there, they would be in jail. I know so many people that are in jail, and they're bold. They're humongous guts over there to go out on the street and protest. And you know that you're going to end up in Gulag, you know? So Russian people are not the enemies of Ukrainian people. The Putin and his oligarchs are. And nationalism as it is needs to cease to the humans. It's just, you know, I don't think we can go much further if the history keeps being shoved into our faces what happened in the past.
Yeah. So aside from that, just on an emotional, personal survival level, like you detail what you went through just trying to stay alive and the worst of the times in Sarajevo, what advice have for the Ukrainians who are getting hit?
Once again,
the people still there in the areas that are getting hit. Gene said a lot of Ukraine is not getting hit at all, and life is normal. But yeah, obviously, it is not normal for people. And then, of course, other people got out, and now they're refugees, but still are carrying various amounts of heartbreak and grief and PTSD with them. Well, what if, can you think of anything you could say to them?
Yeah, yes, but I kind of don't want to, because I'm going to sound like my friends from Belgrade telling me to stay strong. I am not in Russia right now, and you know, I remember when it happens, and you know, they weren't one shooting at us, but they told me, oh yeah, well, you know, you gotta stay strong, like it's easy for you fucking to stay strong, I getting shot at, you know. So that's why I'm really uneasy about giving any advice, except take care of yourself, run between the bullets, move the target, collect the water, learn how to do all of that stuff, stay clean and true to yourself physically and psychologically. It was a matter of honor. I can bet you in Kiev right now, without electricity, running water and food, they all look beautiful and clean. And at that, it's a matter of honor to do that with this much of the war. Develop your art. It's a good time to, you know, it's not about what you should do. It's what you can do. You can only create in those circumstances. This is the moment to create. And that was the moment for me to create. The best shit that I made then. The best decisions that I made then. If there was no war, I wouldn't be here right now. If there was no war, I wouldn't change my mind. Who knows what would become from me? What would I be? I wouldn't be this person, definitely. So there is all, you don't know what's good for what. That's the only thing that I can say. What I sometimes would like to say, I'm not going to say, oh my God, I'm so ambiguous, but I'm trying to be careful, because preaching to the people that are in such a horrible condition, I know how it is, and don't fucking preach to me, come over here. And I would love to come over there, and I would love to help if I can, however I can. I tried. We tried. Culture Shock tried. We couldn't succeed. I might go with Eugene next time. What I would like to tell them, what I did, what I'm the most proud of, is that I swore to myself, and not telling anything to anybody, but I swore to myself that other people's nationalism is not going to make me a nationalist. Other people's bigotry is not going to make me a bigot. The other people's fascism is not going to make me a fascist. I am not going to become them, and I did, and I didn't, and I'm not. I understand the pain, and I understand, like, same thing, if you remember, I said, like, I do not agree with a lot of things, but I understand terrorism, this and that, like, whatever. I don't understand, I don't agree with hate and nationalism, but I understand if you're exposed to one, to become one. Just try not to you're going to be proud of yourself later on. It's hard. That is the hardest thing. That's the hardest thing. That's still the hardest thing for me. When I see somebody behaving and being the worst thing that I can imagine, cannot make me close to that person. And it's so easy. Dude, hate is so infectious. Hate is so, it's so contagious. It's the most horrible thing in the universe. And I think it's like heroin. It has a life of its own. It spreads.
Oh, yeah. But then there's also fighting prejudice or what some people would call bigotry, where, yes, some friends of mine and some favorite musician types and whatnot have gone all in for Trump, you know. And
yeah,
I know. Two or three people who even went to January 6th and were all in on it. And it's hard to then peel that back away and see them the same way I did before without any prejudice that, you know, this kind of some ways burns a bridge.
I know who you're talking about, and it totally does. I can't say you're wrong. I would love to say that you're wrong. They'll still be my friends. Oh my God, are they? I don't know, man. Until you dirty your own hands, I guess you can still be my friend. When you dirty your, I mean, you know, I know different people. I've been on this earth for a long time. I know people that most of the humans would not be friends with, and I'm still friends with. I grew up with those guys. I did not, you know, I grew up in the hood. I know my friends, and I'm still friends with them. I'm trying, you know, there are family members that are very much right, but not really doing it, just thinking about it and talking about it. It's one thing if we start looking at each other through the gun, through the, how do you call it in English language, that thing?
The rifle scope.
Yeah, through the scope. That would be hard. But I know friends back home that were looking at each other through the scopes and still are friends today. It's possible.
So speaking of the gun, how did they all make their way in?
Oh, we got it. Oh, we got it. Okay, funny you say that, because you were the one dissing Yugo the other day. That was the real industry. Yugo was just a cover-up, dude. Zastava made guns. That's the main thing about Zastava. That's the main income. At some point, Tito was selling guns to Iraq and Iran during their war. Both of them. The same distributor. I mean, we had guns. We had a lot of guns. And the immigration from World War II, you have to understand, for 1945 was only maybe 40 years before this shit started. It's not a long time, right? And all of these fascists that ran away to Argentina, United States, Canada, Australia are still alive on both sides, on Croatian side and on Serbian side. And they, the moment Tito died, they moved back in with their money and their guns and everything. I mean, you have to understand that none of these governments was fascist free. None of those guys. It's always them. It's always right. It's always, you know, right wingers from battling the other right wingers over our back. You know, there was no left wing in the war. During the war in Balkans.
And didn't you get attacked by Croatia when Franjo Tuđman, or however you ever say his name, was running? Didn't
you
attack for Milosevic or not?
Yeah, well, I can't tell you exactly the timing of the attacks, but I do know my friends in Herzegovina that were just kind of with them together, and then all of a sudden these guys put them in the concentration camps. You know, Croats put Bosniaks into concentration camps, supposedly on the same side, you know. And nobody's clean there. Nobody's clean. Right. I don't want to go into the details there. Nobody's clean there. Nobody's clean there.
Well, you also mentioned Herzegovina for the first time, and I've sometimes heard the whole country referred to as Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Yeah, which is, it's a geographic.
What are they?
It's a geographic, they're not Herzegovinians. There's just a geographical term. It's like East Washington, West Washington, basically. But even East Washington, West Washington is more political term, because East Washington is more conservative and West Washington, Seattle is more, more liberal. But this is just the Herzegovina. It's just a geographical term. It's just this part is called Bosnia, this part is called Herzegovina, together is Bosnia Herzegovina. It's confusing. It is confusing because we have three nationalities in one country. It's actually three religions, but we identify nationalities with religions, which
right.
I can't explain right now. What's my nationality? Bosnian. But over there, it's not. Over there, I have to be this one, second or a third, and I'm neither. I don't care. I was Yugoslavian at the time because Bosnia was too small for me. You know, that's why when somebody asked me where I'm from, I'd say I'm from Sarajevo. Hopefully, the name of that city is never going to change. You know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a TV show here called Mysteries of the Abandoned.
I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. So have you seen the one where the bobsled run in Sarajevo is the abandoned?
No.
Yeah,
oh no!
Congratulations, you've made Mysteries of the Abandoned.
No, but I was just there doing this same movie that we were doing together with you. I was there with this film, and every year somebody dies there because people are drunk and they want to go down the bobsled something.
Looks pretty broken to me. They'd fall through some holes.
Yeah, explain that to the drunk people in Sarajevo.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. What didn't happen often, but in the 19th century, maybe even into the 20th, when they were logging parts of the mountains in Sierra to get the lumber down to the tributaries of the Sacramento River, whatever, they had what was called
wood.
Basically, like smaller with a little bit of water in it to make it slick. It was like a water slide for logs. And those logs would get going at 50, 60, 70 miles an hour down those things. I always fantasized riding one, but I'm not sure I would have survived.
I was a physical guy before I played basketball and stuff, and I really like physical, But nowadays, dude, I mean, how's your back? Mine is hurting like hell. Horrible.
Well, I had it worked on today before I got over here. Overall, it's pretty good. The last Guantanamo School of Medicine tour, maybe the last two in Europe, it turned out our tour manager was a hockey player as well. And his brother, maybe older, maybe younger, they were both hockey players and they were off a farm. So they're already strong as bulls. And then they would work on each other's backs and bodies after hockey practice. The brother went professional in a German league, so he knew how to work on back. And he wound up doing me every single night after the show.
Mm-hmm.
And may I still probably would have been able to do it without, but what would have torn or been strained and hurt like nothing before in my life. I don't know. Although I hate to complain in a way, because I have never been wounded when people tried to destroy my home or anything.
Oh my God! So, yeah,
a very easy time. When you were stuck there, how much did you even go out and travel to different places? Did you mainly stay and hide at home?
No. We were not. So this started, it started in March 2092 in Sarajevo. Croatian war was already on. And April 2nd, I remember the bridge closed. I went to see my mom in the morning and couldn't go back. So if I drinked a little bit that night and woke up at 3 p.m., I probably would have stayed on the other side and you and I wouldn't know each other, probably. Because right, I wouldn't right. go over there.
This is a bridge across a river, right?
Yeah, and it's not really. There's a bridge, and that bridge, the river goes like the river goes north, east west, and the bridge was north south, but that bridge was border between occupied territory by the Serbs and Sarajevo territory at that time. However, on April 6th, I realized that I should go home to get some food, and I also had some weed there. Seriously. And I went through, but then I couldn't come back. And but then I went and they started shooting at me, and then I ran and then I came back with a bunch of flour. No weed, though. I figured out that was stupid. I left weed out there. But I have to tell you, if I didn't die, that I could have died that day, and I could have died many days after that. But that was the day that I remember as being stupid and that I shouldn't do something like that anymore, ever.
You told me when we first met that when you first finally went back to Sarajevo, presumably after the war, not towards the end of the war, you went back to your old apartment and everything was gone except the gold record on your wall from one of your pop hits. That was the only thing left.
It wasn't on the wall. Now it's on the wall. And it's all kind of twisted because my neighbor found it in the trash. Yeah, they found my gold record in the trash. And then I picked it up from her. And it's still kind of twisted like that, standing as a symbol. Yeah, everything was gone. Everything was gone. Some furniture was there that wasn't mine. People were changing and switching, and they were probably refugees too. But more than likely, these armies were switching and changing. Of course, you know, money and everything. There was no money. I mean, I don't understand. I really don't understand how can you get into somebody's home? How do you get into somebody's home? How that invasion of privacy? But you know me well. You know me very well now. We're friends. I don't care about privacy. I don't, whatever I have, you can have. I don't care about that. But don't come into my home, you know, without me inviting you. It is something I still till this moment I cannot put my mind to comprehend what kind of people get into other people's homes. God forbid, kill somebody, but you know, just get in. You go inside, and this, you know, it's horrible.
Yeah, constant battles. No, in Israel/Palestine, where settlers come and forcibly remove people from their homes,
and put some other people in that home. Yeah, it's if you're that person you need home, so you go into somebody else's home, but you know, it's somebody's history. It's not, it's like, you know, my paintings, my, you know, my pictures. I have nothing, dude. I got no pictures from my youth. I have nothing. They were like burning. First thing they do, they burn all the photos and all the pictures from your youth. You're burning somebody's history. It is, excuse me, burning of the history is the first fascist move ever. That's like you burn the proof of somebody's existence. You changing the things. You changing the history. That is the first proof of the fascist.
Well, that was part of Dick Cheney and Clown Prince W and Ronald Dumsfeld and the rest when they went into Iraq. They had no problem with people just coming in and looting the National Museum of all kinds of priceless artifacts, some of them thousands of years old. And it was a deliberate attempt to destroy an entire people's culture and replace it with, I don't know, you know, make them all, you know, little plantation slaves. And the rest of their friends came in to make it what they originally were hoping was going to be the first fully privatized country.
Yeah.
It didn't work out so well.
You know what I'm thinking right now? What I'm thinking right now when you just said that is the mindset of the people that are in the town once the new army comes in. It is, I'm there minding my own business, new army is coming in. And then I'm thinking what ISIS used to do. You know what they do? What's their principle? How they attack the city? So let's say that they conquer the city coming in. Everybody's scared. If, you know, you're sitting at home. First thing they do, they cut the tongues and heads and eyes of the people that you know, fought against them to posterize them, make an example of them. This is how all our enemies are going to end up. Fear. Right after that, there's another team coming in with supplies, with bread, with food, giving it to the people that that are remained over. Now, what's going on in the head of the person who's looking all of that through his window? I was always thinking about that. And, you know, I found an explanation over there. What's going on in the head of a person who's watching all of that through the window? And now he's getting, finally, you know, this, let's say Assad, usually it comes in the circumstances where you already have an idiot who didn't let you eat or drink or anything, right? And now you're having bread. This is going in his head. You know, I really don't agree with this. I don't agree with what they did with my neighbors. Oh my God, they're animals. They're horrible. But me personally, I'm better now. That, me personally, is a foundation of every single absolutistic system. That me personally is the cancer. That me personally is everything worse, like this single-minded look into how that reflects you. You're nothing by yourself. You're nobody by yourself. Everything you have, somebody else helped you. You know, and it's just it's mind blowing how every absolutistic system does the same thing. And all of a sudden, Germany, you know, all of a sudden, Hitler didn't have 20%, 10%, whatever, 30%, 40%. In a year, everybody's doing it. You know, and that's how it is. It's about me personally. It's about selfishness. It's about your own perception of what's good for you. That's the foundation of every single absolutistic system, in my opinion.
Meanwhile, culture shock grows out of a you know, almost a nice little ethnic folk dancing thing and a little boathouse. And then the next thing I know, here's the band. And the next thing I know, you're playing a longtime venue still with us called the Bottom of the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
That's 200 or 300 capacity. And who's going to come see this now? And not only is the band way more fiery and, you know, punked out, metaled out, and many, many other things, violin and whatnot. And the place was packed, and it was mostly other people from the former Yugoslavia or people who were related to them over here who found out about you through those networks instead of indie rock networks.
All together, right? All together. No,
yeah.
No hate between them. That's just, and you know,
and that's all because he's such a magic genius on stage, right?
No, it's all
star
because
power.
It's all because it's the truth. You know, the truth is that we are nothing alone. We gotta be. I mean, we are who we are because of our, you know, our enmeshed culture. We have an enmeshed culture. Balkan culture is enmeshed from Slovenia, Croatia through Serbia and Bosnia, Ottoman Empire, Turkey, Greece, Bulgaria. It's all same shit. You can hear same songs with the different lyrics, some slightly different languages, same time signatures. It's about south of Europe. It's about south of Europe.
And the Middle East when it comes to a lot of the music.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I asked Eugene and other people this about how much of the different, I guess they're Slavic languages or are they not, how much can people understand each other? I mean, I'm assuming in the former Yugoslavia with the different what are now independent nations, pretty good.
Yeah.
But of course, if you go to Serbia, yeah, we speak Serbian. You go to Croatia, oh, we speak Croatian. And in Bosnia, you say what? You speak
Bosnian? Yeah. I mean, you know, why not? You know, why? If Serbs can cross their own language, why wouldn't we have our own? Honestly, it's bullshit. It's the same fucking language. It's the same language. It's bullshit. Yeah.
But how easily can you understand a Polish speaker?
Pretty easy.
Or a Latvian speaker or a Bulgarian speaker?
Latvian probably less easy. Latvian, Estonian, Lithuanian less easy. I think that their origin of their language is way different than the Slavic one. Russian, Czech, Polish, Bulgarian totally, because Bulgarian is very similar to Macedonian. I was there for a year, and I know I almost speak it. You know, Turkish, we have so many same words with Turks too. Greeks, not so much. But the mentality is there is the same. And I would say that, you know, and when you talk to Eugene about that, he's going to tell you too. Language doesn't matter. We do 14 different languages, I think, so far on our records.
Wow.
Because because every song has its own language. Every song is, you know, if you try to translate something that it's supposed to be, let's say in Hebrew, like Ofra Haza, Il Alu, into the English, she did it. Sucks. Same with German. Neunundneunzig Luftballon. Sucks, you know, in the original. Right. Every song is original. And that's, I really, and the thing with us is that we play metal when we want to show our rage against the machine, right? We play punk rock when we want to show our political views. And when we're sad and when we're emotional, we call that sevdah in Bosnia. And we do that. I don't think too much.
When you're happy, when you're feeling festive.
It depends. You know, amazingly so, maybe Culture Shock sounds... songs sound happy, but mostly they're not. mostly they are about the things that are, that is surrounding us, and you know better than I do that, you know, not very many good things are surrounding us.
Oh, many good things when you look beyond what people try to impose on us. I keep telling people, and was having to tell people, they thought Trump was going to get in again. I mean, there's music, there's making love, there's the great outdoors and the open road. You should get in America much
oh,
more.
Oh, yeah.
Than
yeah,
you
yeah.
Know, there's all these, they will still be there.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And love and everything else. Yes, but it's just that you're overwhelmed. You know, I can't do anything. I can't sit down anymore. I used to be able to sit down and make an album. Now I'm making it as it comes. And it comes from, you know, from somewhere. Language doesn't...
How many languages do you know? How many languages?
Well, you know, if you count Serbian, Bosnian, Croatian, that's three, but it's bullshit. It's one language. I do speak Macedonian, Bulgarian. I can communicate. I can communicate in Italian, English. I hope I'm good enough. I used to have a girlfriend in Barcelona, so I had to speak Spanish because they don't like any other language. You know, actually, right. not even Catalan. I manage. I think I can manage anywhere. I cannot say that I
agree.
No, but I can sing in Greek. We have Eleni Govetas, our violin player. She's 26 years old. She's as old as Culture Shock. I'm a very good friend with her father. And I'm writing this new opera theater play, The Light, that it's about anti-Greece. And it starts there, Prometheus and Zeus, their fight over Nikola Tesla. So you know, and I needed Greek, and I didn't know a word. And so Christos, her father, and I, we sit down, he's my age, we sit down and he explains it to me. I give him the melody of my song and what do I want Prometheus to say. And I remember him and I with two bouzoukis sitting and playing, and he's explaining me the words. I have heard these words before. We know these words because the Greek language is the one of their, you know, I have heard these words. So it's
so you aren't just singing phonetic Greek, not knowing what any of the
exactly
words mean.
It's like
you aren't.
It's a lot. No, it's logical. It's logical because you have heard the root of this word, like Gaia, you know, the earth, and we all know that. Geo, right?
For some of your songs or project, have you tried them in one language and then switched to another?
No, that I don't think we've ever done that. Val, our guitar player and the manager of the band, he's actually always he's very, you know, Bill. If Bill wants to, Billy, our friend Bill Gould, when he wants to insult you, he tells you that you're pragmatic. you're very pragmatic today, meaning you fucking calculated. So Val is sometimes pragmatic in a way that he wants everything in
Where
English.
Where is he from?
He's from Bulgaria, from Sofia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how many people? You've had a Japanese bass player at one point.
Yeah. He lives in Berlin right now. We made the song together in Japanese. That, for instance, I made a song that can only be explained in Japanese. It is about this movie, actually, that we were doing, my trip towards the House of the Sun, you know, and I gave him the melody line and everything, and he wrote the lyrics on it and played the bass guitar. So, you know, and Val always wants everything to be in English, and I tried, you know, Satan is my witness. I tried so many times to translate something to make. It's just the melody line, it just doesn't fit. It feels like, you know, it feels like, I don't know, it feels like the Sennheiser microphone in a bad studio. You know, it's just like, ah!
I mean, some people I met in Denmark when we played there, Dead Kennedys did in 82, said that they sang their songs in English because they could write and express their feelings better in English than in Danish. That was them.
I can see that. I can see
meanwhile,
that.
Meanwhile, so Gino Banana was probably sung in Bosnia.
Absolutely.
Serbo-Croatian,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, Serbo-Croatian.
And you must sing. So you don't switch any songs to that language when you are performing in Sarajevo or Bulgaria or wherever.
No. We're doing it the way we recorded it. And people in Sarajevo are singing it in English. Singing it in Japanese the other day, the Tayo, they were singing in Japanese. And like, okay, how's your Japanese? And they know what kind of song, what song is going.
When will we see Culture Shock back out there again?
On the February 2nd, we're doing acoustic show, one and only, out of the comfort zone. Remember when we played for the first time? It's not even that. We're not plugged at all. We were the other day. Look at the Instagram. The other day we were recording it. We're trying to do this the acoustic show.
This is Seattle, or this is going to be
Seattle.
Overseas?
Seattle. Overseas, we're going to Great Britain in April. And hopefully whole Europe. I don't know what Balkan countries are we going to do, but that's going to be April.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, on that note, we are kind of out of time here. So I must bid you adieu. And thank you once again, Gino. And
thank you, Jello. Thank you so much.
Now we have more weird things to talk about that we didn't talk about the last time. Next time you're in my living room just holding court.
And I left the CDs. I still have to get to the CDs. Dominic's CDs and everything. Remember, Dominic gave me the CDs and we were talking and of course I left.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's for him. Those are Alternative Tentacles CDs. Right?
Yeah.
Anne-Marie can get them for you too if you just tell her which one. All right. Renegade Roundtable and out.
My love. Peace out.
Yeah. Put your finger on your throat. Bye, everybody.